Wally and I were married for over 50 years before he passed away. I have 5 children, 18 grandchildren, and 13 great-grandchildren, and I consider myself truly blessed. My parents, our parents, were storytellers, and I loved to hear their stories, and I am sort of a storyteller myself. And so I'm going to add a little flesh to what Brother Joel has said with the stories that our parents told. Dad's family came into Pennsylvania by way of New York. His mother's maiden name was Leigh, and they came from along the Rhine River to England, and from there to New York, and from there to Pennsylvania. His father, the Rickenbach family, and we have their family history back to the mid-1500s, came from Switzerland, but they came to Philadelphia. At Philadelphia, the mother died. They got to Reading. The father and the children went as far as Reading, and the father died at Reading. But the family continued, and by the grace of God, the letters in the Rickenbach met up, and they were our ancestors. They settled in Pennsylvania, and that's where Dad grew up. He told stories about his childhood, which was carefree boys, mostly his brothers, he and his brothers that had the hills and the trees and the streams to play with, and went to school in Pennsylvania. Mother grew up in Illinois. Her ancestors came from Alsace-Lorraine and were the family that came over. They had 6 children. They thought they'd have a better chance, better opportunities in America than in Germany. They had 6 children when they left. When they got to America, they had 1 left. 5 of the children had died on the way over. And the one that was left was our mother's grandmother or great-grandmother, and their name was Bauer. They settled in Illinois, and then Grandpa Ott came from Germany later, but they met there at Hippel, and that's where they were married, and that's where Mother grew up. Dad grew up in Pennsylvania, mother in Illinois, and they met at Valparaiso, Indiana, in college. That is, Dad was going to college. He had gone to school in Pennsylvania enough that he had taught a term or two in the new Bloomfield school there, but he went to. He went to Montana and worked in the copper mines. He went to North Dakota and worked in the wheat fields as a young man, and then earned enough money that he could go to college and was taking a lot of science courses. He was majoring in physics before Einstein ever came up with his theory of relativity. Mother was 16 years old when the twins were born, Velma and Vernon. Her older sisters had gone to school enough that they were teaching, but Mother stayed home to take care of the twins because by that time her mother was deaf and couldn't even hear them cry. So she didn't go to school, but later when the twins got a little older, Sue and Florence said, "Now, Ava, you have to go to school." And she ended up at the operation of taking high school course. There was one dormitory, it was co-ed, if you will, but there was no high school there. The president ate breakfast in the dining hall there and took roll. Anyone was absent once, there was a reprimand. The second time was a warning, and the third time, the miscreant was sent home. Mother worked in the kitchen to help pay for her tuition there and her expenses. And one winter morning, when she was afraid of being late for class, she left in a hurry, and as she left the building, she hit an icy sidewalk that was already filled with students on the way to class. She went down and bowled quite a number of them over. A handsome young man who was there picked her up and whisked her away before anybody could know who it was that had knocked him down. And that was the beginning of L.O. and Ada Rickenbach's relationship. They were married at Hipple in Mother's parents' home. Dad had relationships with the Midwest Lumber Company, which was big at that time out in the West, where there was a lot of building going on in the towns and the homesteads. And Dad, soon after they were married, Dad was sent by the Midwest Lumber Company to Hemingford, Nebraska. This was sort of a learning stop, and they were to go on to Colorado then. Mother, in order to help pay the rent for the house where they were living, Mother did sewing. She did beautiful seamstress work. And she did sewing, and there was a young man who had come to town and needed a place to stay for board and room. And so there was a room available at Dad and Mother's place. The young man was sitting in his suit as he was properly dressed, and he was sitting in the kitchen the first day while Mother was preparing the evening meal. Now, she had splurged and had bought a little beef roast to have for the evening meal for the new guest. She had it out of the oven and was getting ready to carve it when it slipped off the plate and into the pail where the dishwater and the other wastewater was. Cord. She was devastated, but she didn't want to let on. So she said to the young man who was sitting there in the kitchen with her, and had seen this, and she said, "Well, that will have to be for Alexander," Alexander being the cat. She noticed that Mr. So-and-so had kind of a strange look on his face. But at that time, men and women were called by Mr., Mrs., Miss, whatever, and not by their first names. It was sometime later that she discovered that the boy that had the same name was the cat. They had a lot of experiences in a short time there at Hemingford, but then they got the message that they were to go to Colorado, and they had their belongings on the train and were ready to go to Colorado when the telegraph boy came down the platform there, waving his arm and saying, "Telegram, telegram, L.O. Rickenbach, telegram." And the telegram had changed the destination, and he was to go to Ulrich, South Dakota. Now, my hand still kind of stands on end when I think about how close we came to being born in Colorado and what we would miss if we hadn't come to South Dakota. When they got to old. There was a place in the back of the room or two in the back of the lumber yard where they could live, which they did for some time. But then there was land available. There were people who had taken homesteads and hadn't, quote, proved up on them. And so there were quick claim proceedings that were available where somebody else could take over the homestead. And that was how Dad and Mother got their original land, which was 7 miles from town. And they traveled with a horse and buggy. But Dad, being in the lumber yard, built a house, not just a tar paper shack. And he built a little outhouse that hadn't gotten shingled yet. Now, the homestead was right on the trail from the Indian reservation to wherever the Indian people wanted to go. And they were, Mother had no ladder, but she had some boxes. And she, the short little lady, was standing on some boxes, shingling the outhouse while Dad was working in the lumber yard. She heard a sound behind her and looked, and there were two Indian men on horseback, looking with amusement at this little white woman standing on the boxes. Well, she was little, but she had funk, and she, in English, told him to go. And they did, laughing as they went. And that was her story about one of her first encounters with the Indian people. Now, she was afraid, really, to live that close to the reservation. They were, at the time that they homesteaded there, it was 21 years after the Wounded Knee Massacre, and it was about 35 miles from the Wounded Knee Battleground. So she had reason to be concerned. The Brick's grocery store in Orange had been a place of kind of refuge if there was rumor of an Indian uprising. Well, the homestead women and children there had gone to be in the brick store until whatever it was flew over. That didn't happen after Dad and Mother got there. And in the years went by, our family had very good relationship with the Indian people who came in wagon trains, set up their camp down below down by the creek, burned that wonderful smelling ash wood over an outdoor fire, and sometimes worked for our parents. Dad got saddle ponies from the Indian people. They would trade, they took along their trading stock if we had lost the cow somehow or even had butchered. They would trade, they were hungry for beef, and they would trade a horse. So Henry, I think, was the first one which Dad got from Henry Red Bear. And then there was Paul from Paul Bear Saves Life, and some others that were named for the Indians that they were from whom they were purchased. The Indian people were, as I say, good friends for the most part. They didn't communicate very well because they spoke Indian, and the parents spoke English, and there was some quite a little sign language involved. But old Henry Red Bear was a very good friend of our family. His family, of course, the Indian families lived together. And the parents, if anything happened to the parents, the grandparents took care of the children. Well, I remember when Henry Red Bear's son Philip brings him back's wife died and left three little girls. My mother was so sad And Stevie was able, we didn't have a lot of clothes, but some of the clothes that Elsie and I had outgrown or whatever, Mother gave to that family for those poor little girls. And I had been in contact with one of them, and she does remember. And she says they still go to the ranch from Pine Ridge to hunt Indian turnips and to work there. Dad drove with the 7 miles to town and back and took in various things on freight. And I think Joel says that the lumber company had taken a cow, then paid Dad with the cow. So he brought it home, and it was a cow that had been raised in town and used to drinking only the dishwater and whatever was in the pail in the kitchen when they took it out for this cow. Well, Mother took the cow, let the cow broke the lead, and Mother took her to the creek. Well, the cow drank and drank and drank, and Mother began to worry that she was going to birth, because apparently the cow thought she had to eat till the water was gone. And Mother had quite a time pulling that cow out of the pit and leading it back up to the house. Another time, Dad took two live ducks on trade and brought them home in the buggy, and they had them there at the house. And Mother decided that she would have a duck for Sunday dinner. So on Saturday, she took it over the hill west to where Clayton and Mabel Gonzalez lived, just over the hill west on their homestead. When she got there with the duck and told that she wanted Clayton to kill it for her, Mabel said, "Well, Clayton isn't here, but I didn't kill that duck." So she killed the duck, and Mother took it home. And as she was walking home, she became more irritated with herself that Mabel could kill a duck and she couldn't. And when she got home, while she was still that mad at herself, she killed the other duck. Now, they had no refrigeration, so they had to have Mabel and Clayton come for Sunday dinner. This was on Saturday that she did this. And so Mabel and Clayton came and helped eat the other duck. They had neighbors, and there were stories about these other homesteaders. There were two ladies that had homesteaded. Sometimes they built their homestead house right on the line between the two homesteads and live in it, one on her side and the other one on the other side. But these two had a milk cow. They came from back east someplace, so they were going to go east, and this cow was a heavy milker. But they got on the train and left, and they thought, well, when they got back, they'd milk the cow. The cow was in no shape to be milked any longer when they got back, because she had her udders had spoiled, and she was not a milk cow anymore. There were others. There were the two brothers who lived on what was now was got to be the Wilson place, and I don't know what their nationality was, but they spoke sort of broken English. But they were walking to work on the railroad. They were building, the railroad was being built at that time, or being repaired. Anyway, they went to work on the railroad, and the crew was working, and they saw a big horned owl in a tree there. And somebody killed the owl, threw a rock and knocked the owl down, they killed the owl. And so Tony and his brother took the owl home with them. Well, the next day, Tony went to work, but the brother didn't go, and the foreman said, well, where is your brother? Well, Tony said, he's sick. He's sick? Yeah, he's sick. Well, what, he seemed well yesterday. What happened? He ate too much of the chicken with the big eyes. Later, they both left, but as Tony was saying goodbye to my parents and explaining why he was leaving, he put his hands some distance apart and said, the grass, he is too far apart. And that was kind of the story of a lot of those homesteaders. They couldn't begin to make a living on a quarter section of land in that country. But then there were the Culvers, Jolly Culver and his father Andy, that lived fairly close to our parents. They were friends. Jack Murray, and Joel has told about Jack Murray and the others. There were people living on the Plain Place when I was a kid for a while. Back to the Indian people, it was a common sight to see them come, several wagon loads coming over the trail that came around the hill east of the house. They would camp down there, and when they came to the house, they didn't knock. You can't knock on the tent, and so you just look up and there they'd be. One time when I was just little, I was playing with my doll on the floor, and mother was upstairs doing something, and then the door opened. It was winter time. The door opened, and there came an Indian man, all dressed up in furs, and I was small. And I looked and saw him there, and I let out a scream that would have raised the dead. Mother came downstairs in a hurry and wanted to know what was wrong, and I was pointing at the door, which had been closed as Henry Redfair had backed out and was standing there. And Mother went to the door, and he said, oh, too bad. Too bad, little girl. Cry. We had good friends that were Indian people. Then there were some stories about my brothers when we were little kids. Mother told about Joel. They had a dog named Fanny. And one day, Joey, came running into the house, crying his heart out. And Mother said, Joey, what is wrong? He said, Fanny had puppies and there's only cats. I think that's when Mother wanted to cry. We got a dog from fights one time. Well, it was the only dog I could remember, and that was Bowser. But he was just a puppy, and he didn't like being away from his mother. And it was coming evening and time for him to be put someplace. Well, Max, the tender-hearted one, the really tender-hearted one, wanted, of course, to have him in the house. Mother objected. No dogs in the house. He can be in the manger, out in the barn. There's good hay there. It isn't cold. He'll be fine. Well, we put him out there, and he cried, and Max went out and spent the night in the manger with the dog. Max was so tender-hearted. If there was even killing chickens or butchering a pig or a cow, Max would go and hide while the killing was going on because he was just that tender-hearted. We had lots of cats. Oh, there's another cat story. This is after Elsie and I were making up things to do, playing outside. We didn't have a lot of toys, but we had good imagination. And we had heard something, probably I don't think Elsie was the instigator of this, but about sled dogs. Well, we didn't, the dog would not pull a sled. He just sat down. But it was summertime, and we found the sled, and there were a number of tomcats sleeping in the shade of the barn. So we found the twine string. While the cats were sleeping, we hitched them to the sled. The twine string, tied them together, tied them to the sled, and then we went mush. Well, each one thought it was the other cat's fault. We had one heck of a cat fight on our hands until I went to the house and got the kryptonite and came and was able to cut them apart before they could pull the sled under the porch. We did have two pet lambs for a while. White had some sheep, and they gave Elsie and me each a bum lamb, and we thought we had died and gone to heaven until they ate the tops out of Dad's little pine trees that he planted that spring. And then he had a different place for the lamb. But they also would get into the garden. The one liked to eat tomatoes, and the other liked to eat onion tops. And Elsie and I would be sent to get those sheep out of the garden, and they would run ahead of us, looking back over their shoulders, the one with red juice coming out of his mouth, and the other with green. Well, later, they got not feeling well, and after they had deceased, we discovered that they'd been eating dry cement out of an open bag in the garage. And the poor things would have made good doorsteps if we wanted to use them for that. Another story of our Indian friends, there was an older lady that loved Mother dearly. She didn't speak much English, but she would come into the house. They never knocked, and they would drink out of the dipper in the water pail, and Mother would industriously boil that afterwards because they had, the Indian people had a problem with tuberculosis after they were exposed to it. They'd never been exposed to it till the white people came. But one day this old Indian lady came into the house, and Elsie was a new baby, fairly new, in the sleeping in the bedroom, and she woke up and began to cry. And that lady, "Oh, Papoose, Papoose," she said, and ran into the bedroom, picked Elsie up, brought her to the kitchen, and was kissing her. My poor mother, you can't boil a baby. And she was really worried for a while because tuberculosis was a problem on the reservation. And Mother's brother, Vernon, had died of tuberculosis just a few years before that in Illinois. So she was pretty concerned about that, but the lady was so loving that you couldn't be mad at her. Now, I'm so happy that my brother Joel is a historian, and I'm the storyteller, so I don't have to necessarily do things in chronological order. So I want to go back to a couple stories about Brother Don, who is 3 years older than I. I didn't hear this, but I heard the story about it when Don announced, "Once I was a big man, and then I got little again." He got pretty little. There was a time when he was had a loose tooth and didn't want to just let Dad pull it out. So someone had told him that you could tie a string around your loose tooth and tie it to a doorknob and then have somebody open the door. So he tied the string around the tooth and around the doorknob, and the door was closed, and he ordered me to go around on the other side and open the door quickly, which I did. But unfortunately, he was on the wrong side of the door, and instead of losing the tooth, he gained a black eye. He was quite inventive, and he was also a trapper. At one time, when he was not very old, Cousin Herb was there, and they wanted to go fishing. And Mother was so worried about letting them go to the water because there was a fishing hole there in the corner of the creek over south south from the windmill. Well, finally they talked Mother into letting them go fishing, and she sent something with them for bait. And she walked and watched and watched that hole where they had gone. And all of a sudden, one of those little boys came up out of that creek and headed for home on a dead run. Well, Mother started running toward the person who was coming, and there was a hired man, and she said to him, "What does that look like?" And he said, "It looks like one of them's in the water." And so they were both running. When they came to Don, he didn't even stop. He just was heading on for the house. And Mother said, "Donnie, what's wrong?" And he said, "We're out of bait." Which brings up another fishing story when Dad took Max and Joel fishing. And he was taking some kind of cooked meat for bait. Well, they weren't gone too long till they came back home. And Mother was looking to have fish for supper, but there were no fish. And she said to Dad, "What happened?" And he said, "Joel ate the bait." Oh, and another one about Don. Elsie was a baby in the bedroom, in her crib, and he went in and looked and came out and told Mother, "There's a bee on the window above Elsie's bed." And Mother said, "Well, cut its head off and carry it out." Briskly, Sue came out, hollering, and stuck him on his finger. And Mother said, "What happened?" Well, the bee had stung him. That's the first time Mother knew that the stinger on a bee or a wasp was not on the head end. Now, I'm fortunate that my brother Joel did the family history and did such a good job, because this frees me from doing things in chronological order. And now I think we'll go to that trip back to Illinois that Mother took in the fall after I turned a year old. Incidentally, by that time I was walking. But she tells me that I didn't walk very young, but I talked quite young. And my brothers would amuse themselves by walking up to me where I was sitting on the floor and saying, "Velma, why don't you talk?" And I'd say, "Because I can't." Now, this was a story that my brother told to a fellow legislator in later years when I was monitoring the legislature, and he was a legislator, and he came upon me in a conversation in the hallway with the legislator, and Joel said to the man, "Pay no attention to her. She could talk before she could walk, and she could walk when she was a year old." Well, the fall after I was a year old was when Mother took the boys and me and went to Illinois, of course by train. When we got to Omaha, we changed trains, and that was a huge depot. That was the big train depot where the trains. This was the big turning point. It changed point, and mother had to change trains. So she and the boys and I were in the big depot, and she was sitting beside the bag, even waiting for her train to come, when she noticed that I had disappeared. I could walk by that time, and she sent the boys to find me. Well, they finally found me standing in a big fireplace at one end of the depot. And of course, this was fall, it was warm, there was no fire in the fireplace. It had been at one time, but I was standing in the fireplace. Well, they dragged me back to Mother and told her where I had been. At which point I shrugged myself away from them and headed back for the fireplace. Mother said, just let her go. We'll know where she is when we meet her. This was pretty typical, I guess. She told me later years, that when I was little, I was as independent as a hog on ice. Now, I've never seen a hog on ice, but I don't think that was a compliment. When we got to Illinois, Mother and I were staying at the house in Hopewell where Grandpa and Grandma lived, and Aunt Velma was living there too. She was teaching. Mother was helping take care of Grandpa, who had had a stroke. That was in the fall, and sometime along there, in that period of time between then and the next May, when Grandpa and Grandma died, just a month apart, Aunt Velma had a friend who had a new baby. And she came and said to me, Velma, would you like to go see a baby? She was going to visit her friend. And I had been exposed to a baby. So, yeah, I went with her. And while we were there, the baby was hungry, and the mother fed the baby the way mothers fed babies at that time. I didn't say anything at the time, but a week or so later, when Aunt Velma wanted to take me back with her to see baby Robert, I said no. She said, Velma, don't you want to go see baby Robert? No. Well, why don't you want to go see baby Robert? Baby Robert beat his mama all up. There was, after Grandpa and Grandma both died in May, then Mother and the boys and I came home. But a year later, just a year later, Aunt Velma's twin brother, Vernon, developed tuberculosis and died. Again, about in May, and Mother took Don and me at that time and went back and was there for quite a long time. That was when she was there. She hadn't been feeling well, and Dad suggested that she go to a clinic. And I don't know where Don stayed. Well, I had the cousins. Aunt Susie had three sons, and they spoiled me considerably. And when it came time for us, when Mother was ready to come back, and then we were going home, they told me Mama was coming, and I was going home, and I said, me go home? No,